What's up, people? This is Tony Powell, and you're listening to Powell to the People, episode 21. Well, I'm going to get right into it. This past week has been filled with a ton of intrigue as the Mueller probe, you know, continues to slowly but surely encircle the Trump crime family. We had a loss this past week of former President George H.W. Bush. And I decided just to give my thoughts on the Bush 1, Bush 41. Many of you know me. If you've been listening, you know I'm certainly no, I do not lean anywhere near the right. The only thing I think I do right-wise is I read from left to right. That's about it. You know, many of you know that I'm proud. Left-leaning, progressive, liberal, democratic socialist. Some of you might call me a commie. I'm not a commie, but I certainly lean left. So I say that as a pretext for what I'm about to say about George H.W. Bush. I thought Ronald Reagan was one of the worst things to happen to this country. I know that the right loves him and they think he's you know, some sort of deity that needs to be canonized. I don't. I think he was one of the worst things to happen to this country. Ronald Reagan was a B actor, C actor, who acted his way through the presidency. Not a bright man at all. Yes, he could deliver lines, but that's what his job was as an actor. So I didn't see that as anything. I don't know. You know, how he got to the office. I guess I do know how he got to the office. He defeated Jimmy Carter. And I mentioned this in a previous podcast. You know, I just thought he was bad. The trickle down economics, the supply side economics, I think did tremendous damage to our economy and the trajectory of our country and in terms of our priorities. This guy was against, you know, all kinds of social programs. He brought the lie of the welfare queen to our body politic, you know, and demonized the poor, you know, and celebrated the rich. And for 30, 40 years, we've been trying to deal with the fallout of his presidency. He chose, George H.W. Bush to be his vice president. And as much as I disliked Ronald Reagan, I could not find myself disliking Papa Bush. I couldn't. I just couldn't. I thought that he was an intelligent guy, Yale graduate. I thought that he had a sense of foreign policy and diplomacy. While I think he was weak on the economy, or didn't understand the demands of the economy as we were in recession during his presidency, I never got the feeling that he was inherently a bad guy. I didn't, you know. Now, I can't say that for the people that he surrounded himself with. You know, the Republican Party after Reagan took a funky turn. It was the lunatics running the asylum. And so you got some of these real, real negative people. And I think H.W. Bush was sort of the old school Republican, you know, not necessarily socially conservative, country club Republican is what he was. Not necessarily, you know, pro race or anti race, just, you know, just laissez faire on the business and, you know, let things happen as they were going to happen. He was certainly mindful of the geopolitics of the world as a former CIA director, but I just never got the feeling that he was, you know, one of these culture warriors that Reagan courted and sold himself as. So, you know, and that's, you know, I'm just putting that out there. I mean, the Willie Horton ad, yeah, you got to get him now. That the Lee Atwater special, the Willie Horton ad was damn sure racist. No question about it. He scared the country using that old racism, you know, scary, big, scary black man coming to get you. That's been the Republican policies for the last 40 years. You know, somebody's coming to get you, whether it's ISIS or immigrant caravan or Al-Qaeda or whomever. Somebody's coming to get you. That's part of their game plan now. And back then, Papa Bush used, Willie Horton, this big, scary black man that was released on a prison furlough and went out and committed an assault on somebody. And he was running against Michael Dukakis. And again, I think we need to kind of revisit this. In 1988, my intention was to vote for whoever won the Democratic nomination. And unfortunately, it was Michael Dukakis, And I used to make jokes about Michael Dukakis when I was starting out as a comic. I always thought that his name sounded like something you told or said to a potty training toddler. And I just didn't think that he was all that, he could have certainly have won if he had just, had some balls. I mean, I remember the debate where they asked him, in reference to this Willie Horton ad, which I guess the GOP saw as a weakness. They asked him, about the death penalty and how he would handle it if somebody attacked his wife. And he was like, well, I still, I don't support the death penalty, and I don't think that's right. And to me, the answer would have been real simple. You should have called me. I was a young person, but you should have called me. You should have asked me. I would have told you simply, say this. If somebody did something to my wife, I would like 5 minutes alone in a room with them. I can't guarantee you that they're going to walk out of that room alive, but I would like 5 minutes. Now, that's not justice. That's revenge. And that's how I would feel. As far as the law is concerned, I don't believe in capital punishment. I don't believe that the state should be judge, jury, and executioner. Bam. There's your answer. That's how you handle that. But going forward, and then the fucking ride in the tank. I mean, what was he thinking? I mean, riding around in the tank looking like one of these big, Funko dolls, big bobblehead riding in the tank with the big helmet on. That was a bad move. So when Bush won, unlike Reagan, I didn't feel so much defeated or shocked or worried about the nation the same way I felt when his son won and the same way I felt when Cittolini won. I didn't feel the same way about George H.W. Bush. I truly believe that I thought that the country was in good hands. If it was going to be a Republican, they were in good hands and somebody who I think would have been a good steward of the country. I believe that he was, he loved the country and he respected the office of the country. And, I knew that as a veteran, as a World War II naval aviator, as a pilot, as a war hero, he would be reluctant to put the country's, soldiers in harm's way, for folly. So in that regard, I thought that he was all right. And I'm going to say that I think of the Republican presidents in my lifetime. I think, he was the best one of all of the Republican presidents in my lifetime. So I just like to say rest in peace, George H.W. Bush. Hopefully we will get back to a Republican Party that you are a part of and oust these Trumpistas at some point going forward. But Godspeed, and I hope it hope that your family finds some comfort in knowing that there was great regard for their patriarch. So moving on, as I said, the Republican Party has been on a funky trajectory since Ronald Reagan, and it's reared its ugly head again recently in Wisconsin. Now, many of us, are aware that there was a blue wave, a huge wave. Apparently, in the midterm election, Democrats won more seats, got more votes than any midterm election in the last 100 years. I mean, it was truly, truly an astounding wave, a true blue wave. Even though, I mean, it was only about, and I say only, 40 seats changed hands. But a lot more than 40 would have changed hands had it not been for some of these extreme gerrymandered districts. Gerrymandered districts that, I mean, that just boggle the mind. And a couple of the states that are extremely guilty of these gerrymanders are some of the same states that handed Trump the White House. I'm talking about Wisconsin. I'm talking about North Carolina. Pennsylvania has been called into play, but they have a Democratic governor now. But in Wisconsin, and this is why I'm bringing this up, you know, and this is what I'm saying. When you talk about transfers of power, what the country's supposed to be, it's supposed to be about peaceful transitions, peaceful transfers of power. We're supposed to be about electing our representatives, you know, people that represent us in Congress is supposed to be chosen by us. So in Wisconsin, where Democrats got the plurality of votes, got the majority of the votes, the district was so gerrymandered, is so gerrymandered, that even with that wave, I'm talking about tsunami type wave, they still didn't lose a lot of seats. And what they just did in Wisconsin was they voted the Republican, the lame duck session. Lame duck session is that session between the time that the new electees take office and the old go out. And that lame duck session right now, they just voted to maintain their gerrymanders. They want to defang the incoming governor, Tony Evers, the Democratic governor, and they want to defang the attorney general. They want to put into law a thing that says that they're allowed to have their own lawyers to sue or to fight the repeal of the gerrymandered districts. In other words, an extreme gerrymandered district, the state legislator, which is is the result of extreme gerrymandering. These fools who are probably did not get the majority of votes. I mean, it's clear the state, you know, the state election was clear. They did not get the majority of votes, but they want to hang on to power. They want to hang on to power. They want to make sure that the Democratic governor who won by a plurality, especially in a state like, you know, in a state because it's, you know, the votes are counted for the governor's race. It's not about districts. It's just, you know, whoever gets the most. So the Democratic governor won by a lot. Beat the shit out of Scott Walker. And the same thing with the attorney general. But they want to make sure that these guys have no power to overturn the gerrymander. In other words, I stole a seat and I want to make sure that you can't take my stolen seat back from me. That's crazy. And when you think about it, that's really, really nuts. I stole something. And now I'm voting to make sure that you can't hire a cop that can come and take it from me. Oh, okay. That's what they want to do. In North Carolina, I'm bringing this up because my family is actually living in this district, Bladen County, North Carolina, District 9, Congressional District 9. There's been another case of not voter fraud. You know, voter fraud is what Trump talks about. Oh, yes, we have all these illegal aliens voting illegally and to give Hillary these numbers. And the Republicans always use the voter fraud. We have to do something about voter fraud because all these people are voting illegally. People are not voting illegally. First of all, voting illegally is a felony. I don't know any damn body that's saying, you know what? I want to go to jail so I can cast a vote for this person. I have not met anybody like that. I don't know anybody like that. But apparently that's what they're saying. But election fraud is a little different. Election fraud is when you don't count the votes or you make sure that the gerrymanders are so severe that there's no way you can overturn the legislature or the congressional district. And that's what they did in North Carolina. What they did was they actually had a GOP operative going around collecting the absentee ballots from older black people and destroying them. That's it. You know, not even pretending to do something, just getting rid of them. Saying, all right, you cast the vote. Thank you very much. This is it. Okay. Thank you very much. And they take these ballots and they destroy them. They disappear them. You don't know what happened. And so this guy in a state as funky, legislatively as North Carolina, in a state that has this extreme gerrymanders, they've gone to court multiple times and the courts have said, North Carolina, your gerrymandered districts are, done with, to disenfranchise minority voters. In other words, you drew these up with race in mind. You are disenfranchising the people of your state. And North Carolina said, yeah, okay, so. And they keep doing it. They have not changed it at all. So in Bladen County, which is a county southeast in Southeast Carolina, it's between Fayetteville, if you've ever driven from New York to Miami on 95, Fayetteville is where a lot of people stop, to sleep over and continue that trip, that two-day trip. Fayetteville, and if you go about 30 miles southeast of there, it's in between Wilmington, which is right on the coast, and Fayetteville, Bladen County. You know, cute place. I spent my summers there as a kid. They have been denied. They have not had their due. And this is what's going on. So it's becoming very, very clear. Not with just with the blue wave election. It's becoming very clear, not just with the 3 million votes for Hillary that should have defeated Donald Trump. It's becoming very clear that the only way, and I've been saying this for the longest. I keep repeating it. I keep tweeting it. I keep saying it. There are more of us than there are of them. And usually the solution to changing any dynamic would be if you have more people in an election that vote for your ideas or your candidates, you should be able to win. But the GOP is so entrenched and so desperate to hang on to their power. So desperate to hang on to control of the country. So desperate to rule, have minority rule, which is what it is. That's what the Senate is. But now they want to make sure that they can almost control the House in the same way. They're so desperate to hang on to power. They will literally do anything to keep it. They will do anything to keep it. And so I'm saying, I guess out loud to, my Democratic friends and buddies and the people who aspire to run. You know what? Let's stop bringing a butter knife to a gunfight. If these fools are going to go this hard, we got to go just as hard back at them. Enough with the nonsense. Enough with the concessions. And I'm looking at you, all the people that conceded, Beto O'Rourke, Andrew Gillum, Stacey Abrams. I know that it looked like there was no way forward, but I'm sorry. It is clear. It is clear that it not only did it happen in North Carolina, in the 9th Congressional District of North Carolina, it's been happening all over the country. It's been happening all over the country. Where they can get away with it, they're going to get away with it. I know Stacey Abrams didn't have a whole lot of hope because the governor is such an asshole and he was the Secretary of State. It was the referee. He was refereeing his own game, you know, and everybody knows what it's like to play with a cheetah. You ever play with a cheetah? You know, you're playing tennis or you're playing something that you have to keep score, playing hoops. And you say, what's the score? And the guy keeps changing the score. You go, oh, hey, what's going on here? That's what happened in Georgia. And so maybe she did not have a way forward. But Andrew Gillum, I'm sorry, man. There was something going on down there that they made sure. And when boxes of ballots go missing or all the ballots aren't counted, something's going on here. Something is definitely not right here. So I'm saying to all these Democratic candidates, Beto O'Rourke, I'm sorry. I know the racists in Texas want to keep supporting Trump. But there were so many more people that came out, and for Texas to go by single digit percentage points, for Texas to go that close, somebody put their thumb on that scale. Somebody put their thumb on that scale. Cambridge Analytica, I think that's Ted Cruz's company, who's clearly putting their thumb on the scale. We have to start acting like they are not, they're fucking with us. They're not fucking with us. They're going hard. And we have to start acting like that. And again, stop bringing butter knives to a gunfight. If you want to, now, because the stakes are so high, we can't do this, because what they're doing, what this thing in Wisconsin is about, what this thing in North Carolina is about, what this thing in Florida is about. And I'm just pointing them out. I mean, you know, Michigan, again, I think there's a Democratic governor in Michigan now, but what they're doing, this is not about, you know, we always live in the moment. Democrats live in the moment, you know, because, you know, we're progressives. And so we believe in change as new ideas present themselves. We evaluate these ideas and then we decide to go forward. Conservatives are resistant to change. They're not trying to change anything. They're not worried about what happens this year, this week, next week, 2 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. They don't care about none of that. Their goal is the long term. They play the long game. They have been working to try to repeal Franklin Delano Roosevelt's social programs since the 40s, trying to chip away at Medicare, trying to chip away at Medicaid. I mean, that wasn't Roosevelt, but I mean, trying to chip away at Social Security, trying to get rid of all of these social minded contracts with the country since the 40s. And if you read the news and if you watch what they vote on every week, every year, they're just chipping away. Like the dude in the Shawshank Redemption, like Tim Robbins, you know, just slowly but surely chipping away, you know, trying to build that tunnel to get on out of that jail. Year after year after year, week after week after week, every day, you know, collecting that money, moving that money from one place to another place every day. That's who they are. They're Tim Robbins in the Shawshank Redemption. They are going to crawl through the shit to get on out, however long it takes. That's them. We, on the other hand, you know, we're like the dude that got out and went and hung himself. You know, got out. We didn't know what to do. And we just, you know, or something just set us off. And we, you know, we freak out and we panic. And the next thing you know, we're swinging from the rafters. That's us. We're that guy. And Democrats need to get a little tougher. We need to recognize that, yes, while we believe in change, and being flexible and adaptable, we have to make sure that we're not being little bitches and little punks either. That when you bring the gun to the gunfight, we strap too. See, I've always said this, and it's fact. Republicans fall in line. Democrats fall in love. Let me say that again. Republicans fall in line. Democrats fall in love. You remember how in 2015 and 2016, all these Republicans, all the old school Republicans were talking about how much they hated Trump. Remember Lindsey Graham back then? Oh, he's the worst and this, that, and the third. And all these people, all these so-called anti-Trumpers in the GOP. They couldn't stand him. They thought he was not up to the job. They knew he wasn't up to the job. If you talked to him for 10 minutes, you know he's not up for the job. Didn't know his shit. And they hated him until he became the president. And now you can't even separate him. You can't even separate him. It's not that they say, you know, it's the Republican Party. No, it's the party of Trump. It's Trump Uplicans. Can I say that? Trump Uplicans. That's who they are. Party of Trump. They fell in line. They got behind it. What did we do? We started arguing about, well, you know, Hillary is corporatist, and I like Bernie Sanders, and if he doesn't win, then I'm not going to vote for her. Wait, what? That's what we did. That's what we're doing now. That's what we're doing. You know, we're not even in the fall of 2020. Right now, you're starting to hear it. People are saying, well, if so-and-so doesn't get the nomination, I don't know what I'm going to do. What you better do is bring that gun to the gunfight. I don't give a damn who wins the nomination. Kamala Harris, if you get it, you got my vote. Beto, if you get it, you got my vote. Joe Biden says he believes he can win. Joe Biden says he thinks he's the best candidate for the job. Let me say this about Joe Biden. Joe Biden has had multiple chances to win a presidential election, and he's come up short. I like Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden is a sharp dude. I think he gets it. But I don't think he's the guy to go forward. Unless, and that's we're talking about fall in love and fall in line. If he's the nominee, he's got my support. If he is the nominee, I hope he has the good sense to choose somebody that is dynamic, that the country will get behind, that the country will rally behind as his running mate, whether it's an Andrew Gillum or it's a Beto O'Rourke or whether it's a Kamala, whomever it is, to make that ticket appealing. But if he's the nominee and he picks some, you know, picks whomever, I'm still going to support him. Because you can't support this other dude. I'm going to support him. And that's what I'm trying to say to my fellow progressives, my fellow Democrats, my fellow Democratic socialists. You know, I'm not trying to hear about Bernie Sanders, who is not a Democrat. I'm not trying to hear people say, oh, what if Bernie is thinking about running? I'm not trying to hear that. You know, Bernie, Bernie, I think, would probably run as an independent because right now his ego is juiced after his last dance with the idea of running for the White House. Prior to 2016, the great majority of you had not even heard of Bernie Sanders. I knew about him because I listened to Tom Hartman on Sirius Radio, but the great majority of the country didn't even know who the fuck he was. Now all of a sudden he's supposed to be the standard bearer? No. No. As I said, I mean, somebody's going to emerge. Somebody's going to be the candidate. I don't know who. I'm just telling Democrats, stop your bullshit, stop your nonsense, stop. You know, it's not about love anymore. It's not about love. You know, we can't find a candidate we love. It's not going to be Barack Obama. It's not going to be Michelle Obama. It's not going to be one of them. You know, it may not be Beto. So it may not be somebody you love. But whoever it is, you better get behind them. And you better make sure your peoples get behind them. And I'm not really talking to black folks right now. I'm talking to white people because white people are the ones who put Trump in office. White women, white men, that's on y'all. But as far as my Democratic brethren are concerned, you know, just get on board. Don't worry about who it is. Don't worry about the wise. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Just get on board. There's a couple of things I do want to talk about before. I mean, I know I've spent a lot of time talking politics, and you know, people that listen to the show know I love politics, and I'm happy to talk it. But there was a couple of things that happened in the world of sports, and I'm a big sports fan and a big NFL football fan. Even though my cousin Derek Powell suggests that I should stop watching and boycott NFL football until Colin Kaepernick gets a job, and he's probably right. And the way my fantasy football league went this year, I shouldn't have watched any of this stuff. But having said all that, there was an incident that happened in February of this past year where Kansas City star running back Kareem Hunt apparently got into some sort of altercation in his residence, in the hallway of his residence. I guess it was a hotel, I think is where he was. And he attacked a woman he did not know. He knocked her down. This is a running back who was used to running over 245-pound linebackers. So he should have no issue at all running over a 115-pound woman, which is what he did. He literally ran her down. You know, I think he mushed her and then he knocked her down on the ground. And while she was on the ground, he kicked her. And for the longest time, you know, he was telling his general manager and his coaches at Kansas City that, you know, was much ado about nothing. There was no real big deal. It was a little altercation. Somebody got a little loose and blah, 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 blah. And, nothing to worry about. And they believed him until the video showed up. So somebody, TMZ found the video of him brutalizing this woman in, the hallway. And my first thought was, I don't know where you have to be, what your mindset has to be to put your hands on a woman. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what that is. And I'm saying, you know, even if they put their hands on you, you know, you have a right to defend yourself, but he wasn't being assaulted. He wasn't being attacked. He was angry. He decided that he wanted to let this person, he did not even know. So it wasn't even like aggression that was a function of familiarity with somebody and, you know, crime of passion, so to speak. This was just somebody that was in the hallway. He did not know, and he spazzed on him. He went berserk. And so, you know, he came on TV over the weekend, and he said, that wasn't me. And I want people to know that that's not me. Well, yeah, I'm sorry, Kareem. That is you. Video shows that it's you. You know, the video shows you kicking a woman when she's down. This is not some dude that jumped on you, mind you. This is not some dude that you were fighting and then you had to, you know, lay hands on. And at the end, you want to give a coup de grace and you kick him. No, this is somebody you had knocked down who was physically unable to defend themselves against you. Physically unable to defend themselves against you. And you kick them while they were on the ground. And then these assaulters asked during the interview, it was on ESPN, she asked if he had reached out to this person, you know, to say anything. And he said no. And she asked if he was seeking counseling for the events. And he said no. He said he was considering all of those things. Well, you know, that's kind of cool, I guess. You know, if you have an anger management problem or if you have a problem with violence against women, you should seek counseling. And you should attempt to talk to that person, to explain yourself and apologize to them. But not after the video comes out, man. Not after the video comes out. This happened in February. What month is this? This is December. Now, February is the second month. December is the 12th month. So you played the majority of your whole season. You were having an all-star year. You're, you know, maybe, you know, in the MVP conversation, all that stuff, you know, you're going to be top running back the whole nine yards. You're doing all your good stuff. You have the ball. I saw they had you mic'd up a couple of weeks ago on I think Thursday Night Football. I had you mic'd up. You're talking, you living your best life. You having a ball for 10 months. Knowing you did that dirt. Now, the reason why this is an incident is because the police came and talked to this young lady. Please talk to her. And they talked to your friends. I'm sure they talked to you. So you mean to tell me you couldn't find out either through the police or maybe the woman's representative I'm sure the police could have reached out and said, listen, you know, Kareem Hunt is trying to reach you and he would like to talk to you and apologize, whatever it was. You know, you didn't do that. And so Kansas City did what I thought was the right thing. They just cut your ass. They cut him. They cut him right away. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now the question is, you know, I think they put him on the commissioner's list so he can't play at all the rest of this year. But he's a talented guy. He's a talented guy, very talented. So, you know, somebody in the league is going to take a chance with him. And, you know, I know he's a young dude. He's 23 years old and I don't wish that he loses his job. I don't wish any of that on anybody, But I'm sorry, man. You know, if you never play football again, that was on you. That was on you. I enjoyed watching you play. I like watching you hurdle dudes. I like watching the way you play. I had you on my fantasy team last year when nobody even knew your name. I had you. But if you don't play again, that's not on her. That's on you. You know, I think the thing that really upsets me about it the most, is that phrase, there's videotape. There's a videotape. Videotape shows Kareem Hunt brutalizing this. Videotape shows Kareem Hunt attacking. Videotape. There was talk before there was tape. That woman told the police what happened. And the police obviously reached out to Kansas City and let them know what happened. Nobody from the NFL did any research behind this. Nobody from the Kansas City Chiefs went and said, listen, I need to know. We're thinking about investing a lot of money in this guy. Nobody, because it's not on videotape. You see, most of these things that happen, most of these episodes of domestic violence don't happen on videotape. Nobody breaks out the camera and says, hang on, I'm about to beat your ass. Let me get my camera. Nobody does that. Nobody does that. Nobody says, hey, wait, you know, look this way. Camera's planted there. Look this way while I beat you. Nobody says it. Nobody does that. You don't do it. Because when these things happen, that's the thing about domestic violence. When it happens on the low. It happens on the low. It happens in the dark. Nobody sees it. Nobody sees it. And then, and unfortunately for some women who are trapped in abusive relationships, they end up being part of their own cover up. They cover the black eyes. They stay home. They don't know how to leave. So this is a real thing. This is a real thing. Now, I don't know that Kareem Hunt is beating his own girl. He has a girlfriend. I don't know if he's beating her. I don't know if he's involved in domestic violence. But I do know that if he felt that he needed to not only knock this woman down, but when she was down, kick her, he's got some issues. He's got some issues that are not being dealt with. Maybe he's got some CTE. Maybe taking all them shots to his head is messed him up. But he's got to get that checked out. And I'm going to say this, you know, because he is talented. And I said it before, he's going to get a job. And if people doubt what I'm saying about him getting a job, all you have to do is look at Cincinnati and Joe Mixon. Cincinnati star running back Joe Mixon is on videotape the same way, knocking a woman out, just knocking, cold cocking a woman at a bar. This was before the draft, and he was still drafted, and now he's a star, and people are putting him on their fantasy football teams, and Cincinnati Bengal fans are going to the games, and they're cheering him on every time he runs the ball, because he's very talented. They cheer him on. Kareem Hunt's teammate, Tyreek Hill, had an issue of domestic violence. Right. His own teammate. So it's not like they don't know these things are going on. And it's not just football. I think the thing that bothers me is they show these black athletes. And it fits a narrative. You know, he brutalized her. Yes, it fits a narrative. Yes, he did brutalize her. But see, the brute is what you're really saying. That the big black strong person is a brute, going back to the Willie Horton thing. Because it's happened in other avenues. It happens in other sports. It happens in other sports. Happens in baseball. I believe Osuna was, you know, beating his girl, and some of these pitchers, beating their wives and their girlfriends. It happens in baseball because football is such a high profile sport, because football is really the sport that drives America like soccer drives. Europe, football in America is the biggest sport. It's bigger than basketball. It's bigger than baseball. And so when their big stars end up being in these situations, we kind of know about it. I think it's been, since the light's been shed on it, I think we need to get out of the football arena and stop talking about NFL football and what football players do and how they beat this one or beat that one, and start talking about what men do. what men do. We've talked about the Me Too movement. I talked about it before. But I think that we are not socializing our male children well. We're not. We're not socializing them well at all. We're not socializing. If a child, if a boy, you know, and Kareem Hunt said he was raised by his mom and his grandmom, and you know that's not who he is. Well, you know, I'm not going to put the blame on mom and grandmom, but sometimes, you know, we need to figure out how to socialize our boys a little bit better than this. We do, because again, Kareem Hunt is a symptom. He's not the cause. He's a symptom. He's a symptom of a larger problem. A larger problem that lives in the dark, that is not videotaped, that's not for all the world to see. So when these guys get called in for beating their girlfriends, I mean, Ray Rice, you know, might still have a job if not for that videotape. But then, as I pointed out, Joe Mixon does have a job with the videotape. So really, it's about talent, level, and skill. And that what we need to start doing is making sure that these stars, regardless of your talent, regardless of whether or not you can move the chains. You know what? If you put your hands on a woman, you just don't need to be with us. You just don't need to be with us. Period. You know, a couple of years ago, Jerry Jones got Greg Hardy, who was a dominating defensive lineman. He used to play for the Carolina Panthers. Dominating defensive lineman who had been kind of, you know, kicked out of the league because of his foolishness. This guy actually beat his girlfriend, threw her on a bed covered with his guns, and asked her which one she wanted to die with, which gun she wanted him to kill her with. And Jerry Jones actually gave this dude a contract. Now, he didn't stick because, you know, his game had deteriorated. He was no longer able to play at a high level. But what if he could? What if he could? Reuben Foster, a linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers, who has had multiple domestic violence charges against him, was finally cut by the 49ers. And less than 48 hours later, the Washington Redskins signed him, even though he was eventually put on the commissioner's exempt list. But the Washington Redskins, because this guy is young and he's talented, signed him. So, as I said, you know, yeah, these guys are high profile. You know, they're high profile athletes. And ones who still have talent still collect a check. Let's understand that. If they still have talent, they still collect the check. I'm not even going to get into the Colin Kaepernick, and I don't know a lot of you, you know my feelings about Colin Kaepernick. I find it amazing that Colin Kaepernick takes a knee to protest brutality, police brutality against unarmed black men, and he is banned, blackballed, never likely to see another day on an NFL field. That guy can't get a job when Mark Sanchez plays for the Washington Redskins now. You know, Mark Sanchez plays for the Washington Redskins. They benched scrub-ass Blake Bortles for Cody Kessler for Jacksonville. But Colin Kaepernick, the guy who's saying, you know, who's never been caught out there with drugs, never been caught out there for any kind of criminal activity. His only crime was, he said, you know what, you have to stop brutalizing men of color. People of color, because, you know, women, you know, black women have been brutalized too. People of color. And I'm not going to stand for the flag if this continues. That was his crime. He can't get a job. But you can beat the shit out of a woman and collect a check. You see, that's where we're wrong. That's what I'm saying. This is not about football or baseball or basketball. I think, quite frankly, if you deliver newspapers or you're a fireman or a cop or some executive and you get arrested for beating your woman, you should lose that job too. That's right. You should lose that. If you're an accountant in some office park some damn way, but you like to go home and beat your old lady, you should lose that job. You see, because I think when you start treating men that way, when you start recognizing the seriousness of domestic violence, and you start making that seriousness you start attaching serious consequences to the domestic violence, then maybe we'll start to see it wane. And I'm not just talking about men either, because there are some same-sex couples who engage in domestic violence, and they need to have the same consequences. Lose your damn job. Get suspended from your place of business. You get on the outs because you can't keep your hands to yourself. So with that being said, I want y'all to start putting it out there. You know, start putting it out there. Start talking to your peoples. You know, start talking to your sons about it. Start talking to your sons about it. About how that violates somebody's human rights. How that violates somebody's humanity. Talk about it. And talk to your daughters about it. Because they need to know that it's not okay. That him beating you doesn't mean he loves you so much. Oh, he just loves. No, he does not love you so much. He's beating your ass. It's time for you to get up on out of there and go. Take your babies out of there. So the babies can't see him brutalizing you. So they don't think that that's okay when they grow up. Get them up on out of there. Find a way. Find a way. Listen, I want to thank you all for listening to Tony Powell. I want to thank you all for coming back to Powell to the People. Again, if you have not subscribed, I don't understand this. I every week. Well, not every week. I mean, a lot of weeks I tell you got to subscribe, you know, but this is what it's about, man. If you come on, you find out, you listen, you learn something. I'm pretty sure you learn something every week. So make sure that you subscribe to Power to the People at the OG Podcast Network. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. We're on iHeartRadio. You can subscribe there. So you can, you know, when these new ones come out, you can listen in your car on your way to work, or listen in your car on the way back from work, or listen on the subway, wherever you are. You know, make sure you subscribe. And if you're interested in reaching out to me, you can reach me at Comic Tony Powell on Twitter, or you can reach us on our own Twitter page, Powell to the Peeps. That's P-O-W-E-L-L, the number 2, the letters D-A-P-E-E-P-S, Powell to the Peeps on Twitter. And we have a Facebook page, Powell to the People there. So, you know, just hit us up. Let us know what you think. I'm Tony Powell. See you guys next week.